Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcast while walking. I'm going to cover this time again a bit more in depth as I've worked my way through this girls' education project that I'm working on, in which we have a scale universe sort of embedded in a sort of cooperative, non-competitive world. It's a sort of a constructive activity where you have deconstruction and construction. Deconstruction is competitive and what we tend to stereotypically place with male sort of interaction learning. Constructive is an integrated way of learning. It's cooperative, it's contextualized, and the stereotypical linkage is with feminine forms or women's learning. Now, I suppose being a scientist, I haven't seen any sort of, I've seen sort of pop cultural versions. I've actually, done data analysis of teaching. When I teach, I run a test, and whereas people tend to go to, they think data manipulation is getting it and reducing the data, which is finding a mean, a mode, and ranking, whereas I will go the opposite direction in terms of data mine things. And there's a relevance to this in that I was able to throw up dimensions of the test, different dimension criteria for a test, and then colour the spheres. This is a bit stereotypical, blue and pink, and then rotate the data set. So if you can imagine getting a mean and an average and a ranking is going one direction, this is going the opposite direction. Now this is basically looking for data set frontiers. Now where has this come up from? Well, just sort of been exposed to geostatistics and trying to actually pick out biases. So for instance, say if you've got one drill team, very experienced, knows to actually drill, you know, put their drill site where they can go down well and it's a bit shady, a bit moisture, something like that. And you don't know this when you're designing it. And you pick out these design data inconsistencies, and you can see it. Or it may be just in the sampling ratio that you will get a frequency set up from your sampling ratio to get these sorts of things. So you can't tell the noise and all these different components. Or you've got one set of data sets and the second set of data sets got a different spread. It may be because you're rushing. You know, they're learning how to take the data set. They take the good data sets, and at the end it rushes, and you get different qualities of data. It's far more different than you will pick up on the mode and mean. And my, I just have a few examples of my father going into various mine sites, coming up across here, going into various mine sites, and they're just trying to figure out what's causing all the data. G'day, chaps. G'day. Bit of way to go, is it still?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just, in my process, walk past someone who's building yet another extension. They're pretty amazing stuff. So that being said, What I have found is difference. You can see obviously different spreads of the data, and particularly with the girl data. And this is not me echo chambering everybody else's stuff. I could see definite frontiers, particularly with multiple choice. You could see a clear frontier of it. And these are 60 students, 30 females, 30 males. And this sort of data analysis, I don't know, I never got a good reception for it. There's a few people who looked at it. One of the interesting things is that people would look away from it or simply push the laptop with it away from themselves, and basically with some sort of veiled warning that, you know, if you do this type of stuff, you'll get in trouble. Just keep it to yourself. But then again, you can see a whole heap of other data-driven problems, like the is it basically misinterpretation for how rankings are done? G'day, is that Lloyd? So, sorry for that stuff. I met a mate and had to talk about all the ins and outs of it all. Getting back to it. Look, mine completely scrambled. There's absolutely no way that I can, after all that, remember exactly where I'm up to. Oh yeah, we're talking about data sets. Now, is a critical difference is people with, academic second-hand knowledge of situations. That is, people who haven't actually been in the classroom or had real data sets, analyzed the real data sets. So, like, it's the difference between a field scientist and someone at the customer reception centre, to give you the exact opposite. So someone at the customer reception centre interested in, so I'm just breathing a little bit, I've just come back up a hill, is trying to actually promote the feeling of calm and confidence in the profession, confidence in everything's going on, that there are indeed no problems, and that they're interested in the transaction, social transaction, that is, that you continue to pay money, invest in that particular idea set. Whereas your field scientists will be going up, pulling up the data sets, having a little glance over the existing theories and the objectives, but actually letting the data talk for itself, and being the word might be, it's not skeptical, but open-minded. So whereas I can see, obviously, in the actual data sets that I've pulled up, differences between male and female performances under certain conditions, the set of conclusions that people love to do when they make up chapters or hit the road, I think a lot of this problem is a phenomenon of in-service training. People see a problem and they think that by having in-service training or having a speaker about it will actually fix it. And there's no equation to say that all your problems can be fixed by in-service training. So it's like having a hidden ore body and you've got sampling methods, and rather than letting the sampling data speak for itself and ask questions of it and see if there's biases in your sampling data, you say, oh well, I have to have an answer by such and such a time. I'll get in a guest speaker who will tell me that they understand and make these wild connections, these wild social hypotheses. However, social hypotheses or hypotheses in deductive reasoning, so hypothesis, which is a speculation, is got two things. There's actually two aspects to it. One is that you can, let's get heating up now, you can just see the time. It's heating up now. So in deductive reasoning, a speculation. So a speculation in the inductive world is something to be laughed at. In the deductive world, it's something to be either proven, or if you can't prove it, you can move on to the next speculation. So it's a tentative basis for moving forward. And so you may not, so you have to actually, from one speculation, it's not sufficient to actually say that speculation and prove it. It may well be best to continue speculate, the speculative process, so you have something which is provable, and you may well prove something totally outside of your starting point, because your information that you want to get to is behind a sort of knowledge hill, and you have to root your way around a valley, around to the background. I know what I'm talking about, because I've done numerical optimizations. Now, there is a sort of inductive way of numerical optimization, which is that classic calculus, looking at the slope. You know, if I want to go down to the lowest point in a place, it's best to actually follow the downhill. But what happens is that if you follow downhill all the time, you might go into a local well and miss the overall thing. So there's a process for this in terms of sort of not completely taking all the feedback completely on face value, and allowing a noise factor, and allowing a factor to go forward. So that being said, the thesis here is that you have an area, in this case the entire scale factor for teaching science, okay, and let's say it's a key thing which you keep on revisiting, but we haven't actually stuck it, pulled it all together and saying, well, let's make the scales a, rather than having a destination which we always go through, why don't we actually pull it all together and make it a competency, a structured competency, and into that build asset classes which support it. And so the supporting ideas behind it would be a taking from analysis of Zodiac, Star Wars, all these pre-scientific aspects, creating a pre-scientific cradle for which is this, in this case, a Star Wars theme for it, which I've developed. But there's actually a logic all the way through it. But that's our overall target. Now, the standard way of doing it is to say, it's sort of like a military attack. You've got your artillery and your infantry, and you've actually got to get the two working together, dynamically communicating between each other. So if the artillery can't work, the infantry comes back to protect it, or if the infantry wants to advance, the artillery goes ahead. Now, in that case, if you can swap over to deconstructive thinking and constructive thinking, rather than saying one or the other, have an environment where both are going on in parallel. And so what tends to happen is that people set up a deconstructive system, and a deconstructive system is ideal for summative assessment, because so you can drill people at different steps of the deconstruction and move people back and forth from deconstruction, and from that extract data marks. How valid it is another question. So there's a great preference for deconstructive thinking, and deconstructive thinking is great from a manual, because you have a deconstructive manual, a deconstructive lesson. Everything's deconstructive. It's competitive. Competition could be scored and marked. And so it goes. So we've got really much a deconstructive lens, and in a separate world, a constructive or cooperative learning. And the concept of constructive learning is one of the big advantages. Deconstructive needs a whole lot of formative structures with it. It's going to be very structured. So if you're taking something apart, you need a shop floor, put it down, you need piles of tools, you need to mark it, you need a whole lot of infrastructure. Constructive stuff is really, you just need the barest minimum, and people can walk up at their own level and decide in their own way and going forward. So in this case, the deconstructive thing is the deconstructive knowledge in terms of this book that I'm working on. And so the book starts off with Princess Leia, two stormtroopers. Stormtroopers do explanation of these two top layers, the Yotta meter and the Pedda meter layer, for describing distances in the universe. And there's obviously a link with kilometers. There's Darth Vader says, does my head in. Then the stormtrooper points to the battles, the designs of the Death Star, which shows a level training center. Just got to work on it a bit. But then the elevators, and then at the end of it, what I want to do is introduce Heston, what's his name, the chef, to give galaxy pancakes. So there's in this, there's a load of deconstructive thinking, but the deconstructive thinking is very pattern oriented. So it's meters, kilometers, and everything's in that meter, kilometers, 1,000 times, and then different scales up the top, and then but moving across, moving away from light year, and moving on to powers of 10. I've had the floor numbers B for bigger. 22 is the biggest scale factor. It's the pancake scale factor. B is 22. You multiply it by 10, 22 times. S, 9, is you divide it by 10, 9 times. So that's sort of modified the actual process, deconstructive process, minimalized, and put it in a system where it's got the maximum access to people. So there's that. So that's the deconstructive framework. the constructive framework to go through, that we're really aiming for, is to actually physically place the model 1 to a trillion, so that's B12 universe, with suns the size of a the O on a page of hello or love. How do you like that? It's the O in love. So that's a way to do it. And you as a family visit this site, and you have the option of visiting other sites, reading about it. And there's a whole series of relationships and, mum, dad, car, stuff like that. All these are all going on, and the knowledge is constructed. Does everyone understand it? Can everyone, it is cooperative. So in a, now it's unlike a museum where you've got these, whole range of experiences interfering with each other. This is an isolated range of experiences, and it gives, certain wow factors. Now, that being said, the range of activities that you want associated with this are constructive. Let's check if my thing's bloody well working. Sorry, I shouldn't say this, but check if it's recording. Yep, it is. Oh, and you can start to see the heat of the day going up. It's going to be a hot one. I'll get back onto it in a moment. I was going to do a fantastic, this is the beauty living out here in Australia. You can, it's actually raining, isn't it? What the heck is going on? It's really hot, and it's blue sky above, and it's beginning to rain. Now this is just thunderstorm, it must be thunderstorm weather. This type of weird thing. So this is where the heck is this rain coming from? I should say occasionally, you can't hear it here. It's, occasionally you get this type of, stuff happening. There's this one day of the year where it's completely, really, absolutely blue sky, and it rains. It's really cold. It rains, and the reason is that somehow the snow is blown off the mountains hundreds of kilometers away up into the sky, and then it just rains. It's not a sun shower. It's only a brief, say about 2 minutes of rain. And it's, people are going, what the heck? But, getting back to this, the entire idea of constructive thinking is that, you've got these constructive models, organizations, everything else can actually enter in on it. The integration of deconstruction and construction, competitive aspects of it, and constructive aspects of it can go. And the beauty of constructive thinking is that, I suppose I'm actually using it because, say, I have seen some kids in the supermarket, they've had a little chat, they're saying, oh, I love Star Wars, blah, 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 and then I've tried to explain a few things to them. Now, this is the other aspect of it, in terms of one aspect is this advanced science is correct. The equations do work at the end, and it's all together, and I don't know, people sort of manage not understanding it by socially pushing it away. And unfortunately, if you understand it, you get pushed away with that understanding. And there's this idea that you can actually leap off the equations, leap off the quantum mechanics, and scramble back to normal society. Or if you realize that for various reasons normal society isn't that good, you can actually just sort of have a bit of a survival walk around quantum mechanics and physics and understanding and put it all together and get a bit of an experience. So it's sort of like, for me, people, so say I brought this car home, fantastic car, let's go for a drive in the car. They get in the car, don't put the keys in the ignition, they all sit round and they all talk about going places and how fantastic cars are. And then you say things like, oh, why don't you put the keys in the ignition? Why don't you put petrol in the tank? Why don't you actually start up the engine? And you can actually drive around the place. And people who've never driven or never done anything else will say, you're mad. Just, what the heck? He's an idiot. And, right, we're getting out of the car. And of course, and that's really what it is for me with quantum physics or the scales of the universe, the scales of science, is that I'm sort of over the emotional trauma of people getting out of the science car and slamming the door, saying, oh, bloody hell, over it, and actually saying, well, look, perhaps these people who live in this world where their science is obviously there, and science is not a direct experience that you can have. It means that it just requires a lot of thinking to actually stitch it all together. And so this is the key thing, is this very humble, low-key thing. It's sort of like you're out in the 1960s kitchen creating, the hors d'oeuvres. In Australia we had these things called devils on horseback, which I think was a piece of bacon wrapped around a frankfurter with a skewer between it. And I used to really revel in staff afternoon tea making these impossible sweets, which were just, rendered full of conflict, but full of what. And so I'd do things like putting a small twiggy piece of salami in a cheesel, and the people would pick it up going, oh, what's, I haven't seen this before, and they just pop it in their mouth. I'd just have a huge laugh. The thing I laughed the most is making a cow out of cheese and sticks and sitting on top of it, and people, because they just accepted it and not realizing it's across there. But it's similar to this type of stuff. You're just preparing dishes and just quietly put it up, and people go, no, not right, what's wrong with it? Just quietly, oh, the twiggy sausages shouldn't be in the cheesels. So next time you take the twiggy sausages out and put them out, and then put a gherkin in the cheese all, so what I'm saying is that this is very similar to just offering offering it up to people, and the people have this interaction with it. Now, this is very much bringing science away from the lab, but into the cocktail lounge or whatever it is. It's the finger food, making science into the level of finger food, where people come across and they can pick it up and eat it. It's not the main dish. It's not main dish science. Main dish science education is another area of finger food, and it's the finger food. It's a tray, and you've got, I don't know if this is classic, footy frankfurts on with sauce for the kids, and some hundreds of thousands. We call it, you American calls it billions and trillions. Covered fairy toast for some people, and some more sophisticated vol-au-vent with octopus in it. The more sophisticated, and it's the idea of the finger food process of putting science on offer. So it's not a main dish. It's not, hang on, here we're doing science. It just happens to be there as a way of getting forward. That being said, there is this entire structure let's face it, the actual, I'm just trying to think of it. I must admit, indeed, I'm just really trying to think of it. I have not encountered one science-trained teacher or anyone in education. I'm really trying to think of it. And it's really, really scraping my brain. No, indeed, I've not found. Look, it's not coming to memory. I'm just flicking through people. I can't put names, but faces. I cannot remember. They're all in inductive reasoning. And inductive reasoning has the ability to pay for credit things up. It's sort of like, inductive reasoning is like building houses one brick at a time. You have to pay for every one brick and make sure it goes in the right way. Whereas deductive reasoning is like ideas on credit, and you borrow for it, and you get the tools and you try and put it together. You know, try and get it up. Now the problem is with deductive reasoning is that I think unless it's similar to training infantry, you have the resources and the money, you could train like an American army full of people who could do a particular job and perform very well in a particular scenario, whereas the Australian training is, or military training, is very much, I would say, or particularly in militia regiment, which is everyone's trained up to, in all aspects of. So if you're in the infantry unit, you're trained on all the roles first, so you can actually take any role, and you're trained on the tactics and at a very high level, so you can be constructive. And it means the end result of this is that your instructors who come out of this instruct the next generation to be like this. Whereas if you have sort of limited specialist people, they will tend to cast the world as in a specialist light and paint a very structured scenario for which they're very successful in. And in a sense, your current teachers, which are on the inductive process, spent a lot of time painting a constructive scenario for themselves in which they are successful, and it's a part of the painting the scenario for themselves. So there's the process of cleaning, so they don't see shutting out deductive reasoning as negative. They see it as a positive, because that battens down the hatches, allows for a smooth operation of inductive reasoning. You don't, when you're laying down the law, that all of this is category A, all of this is category B. B is in A, therefore C has a property of A and B together. C is a member of both A and B. That's your inductive reasoning. And to get a clear view, you can't say, but what if? Curiosity is there. Now, it is very interesting to see these battles, and and it's not necessarily the culture, it's also the geography and the infrastructure brought in. So the Greeks had an interplay between you got these old dogs, they're getting a bit old, they would just bark to high heaven. About 5 years ago, they would be like hound of the Baskerville. So I'm just getting back. It's no point getting caught up about it, angry about it. These are social tidal forces built up in a way that you can't do. So the Greeks had a level of what if, an explanation, curiosity driven stuff, but that only percolated to a certain amount, and social order kept on leveling it down. But there was a level of speculation in Greek astronomy, or Greek view of the world, the basic building of the cosmos. There's been these dead times with the Romans, with inductive logic, and where the half-built questions of the Greeks had no purpose in the process of it. So the Romans are very much inductive logic, and really, in the most grandest scheme of things, this is... we're talking about a kindling the rebirth of a cosmic presence, of our cosmic presence. So this is kindling a rebirth of our position in the cosmos by actually getting the scales of things. So if you're in a room, you know where the drink cabinets are, where the telly switch are. You know the distances to that, and that's part of your occupancy of it. So also part of your occupancy of the system. And so it's sort of your, go and have a refresher course about your living room. Turn where everything else is and have a test and a reward ceremony. But indeed, that's a hell of a lot of overhead to pay for it all. Your living room, but in your living room, the best thing is that you hang out there. You want to watch a movie. You want to switch on the lights. You find these things out as you need it, and it's all in the context. So that knowledge is in the context of other things that's sitting there, and it's constructively built. You mightn't know where the circuit box is because you haven't had a requirement to do it. And so this is very much saying the low key, the thesis of going here is a low key process, but where the low key things build up, have a knowledge of going forward. So the methodology here is not building it. Well, it is a building a better test, building a better structured thing. But going up here, I don't know whether I should. I'm not getting out of breath the way I used to coming up here, but I can definitely feel the pressure going uphill. Okay, so the aim of this is to actually have the intellectual forethought that these seemingly random events, it's sort of like catering. It's like a catering for an event where the focus is on the wedding or the focus is on the 21st, but you've got to get the right hors d'oeuvres to the right people at the right time to meet the requirements to actually build. And when the guest, the dad finally makes speech at the bridal, whatever it is, finally has a great talk, saying what a fantastic couple it is. He refers to it, and everyone somehow is miraculously educated by their hors d'oeuvres. So the person who had the frankfurter with the sauce, the other person with the fairy bread, the person with the vol-au-vent and an octopus, it somehow comes together. Now, why would you do it? Well, the process has been that it's sort of like angry management coming in the top saying, look, society's not really picking up on the importance of this. Not really getting a sense of where things are going. I want you to tap the wine glass of everyone's in their life and actually interrupt sessions and just yell out a few facts about the universe and then shut up. And then if it doesn't work, we're going to fund you to do it again and again every 5 minutes. So these are two different tactics. So one is the soft finger food tactic is this this book that I'm working on, and proposal I'm working on, and look, it mightn't get there, but that's part of the deal. It's a softly, quietly thing where you show the plate of food and you say, "Will this do, madam?" And because it's a personalised plate of food, it might do for certain people in certain situations. It's a different strategy from tapping the glass and yelling out the facts. It's quietly educating via the finger food. That's a pretty amazing analogy to where the heck that's come out from. Okay, I'm back from there, and it's a long haul just to get fit and on top of everything. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.